Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Having a cataclysmic week? Well, hang in there, because we are back with your favorite Avatar The Last Airbender rewatch podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Zach Muhammad, and as always, I'm joined by my amigo, Jacob Redman. Jacob, how are you doing on this fine evening?
Hello, my name is Jacob. I've been given the great honor to podcast about Avatar.
Oh, no, I didn't know we had Jacob D on the pod with us today.
I'm doing good, Zach. That lady is creepy.
I know, and the music cues, whenever she comes on, they always have the horror music, basically. Like, it's like music exactly. From Psycho or something, so.
Yeah, like, you get all, like, tingy, and it's like, uh-oh, like, something's going wrong. Yeah, like, this is little Creepo Depot.
Very eerie, not facts. Very Creepo Depot. I like that. Creepo Depot. Never heard that before.
Yeah, I do not know where it comes from, so.
It's all good. But yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Mm-hmm. I'm doing good. I've had some people come visit me, so
nice,
that's fun.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like a friend from high school is going to be moving up to Chicago, so that's exciting. Yeah, it's things are doing pretty good. How are you, Zach?
I'm good. I shaved my scraggly quarantine beard, so nice. I'm feeling a little fresher. And that's good. I was watching a lot of basketball today. That's all I've been doing. Watch the game 7 of the Mavs and Clippers.
Okay. Yeah. How are you feeling about the NBA playoffs? I know that this is not the 32 fans.
No, but it's pretty exciting. I mean, a lot of the series were not very close, but now we have Clippers versus, I think they're versus the Jazz. That's going to be a good series. The Nets and Bucks is very exciting, especially with James Harden just got injured, so that makes it a lot more interesting. I think the Bucks are actually, in my opinion, even though they lost game one, I would still favor them to win this series against the Nets with no James Harden. So yeah, there's a lot. I'm just happy, exciting, close games. That's what I like to see. So
that's great. Yeah. Good games are great. I feel like I care more about baseball, so like
that's fair.
I have a bit of a long way to go before I get to the exciting part. But even like the NBA playoffs this year, exciting enough to where like I stop watching my regular season baseball games and turn on some NBA playoffs.
Wow, nice.
I know.
Good to hear.
But yeah, good to hear. But we're not here to talk about basketball,
sadly,
or baseball.
Over baseball,
yeah, sadly. Yeah, I'm sure, we can have one episode between season 2 and 3. We can have some more sports content. We've dabbled here and there.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah. Now, we're here to talk about the City of Walls and Secrets. This is a creepy episode. We get introduced to Ba Sing Se, and it is not the safe haven that the Team Avatar thought it would be.
No, it's
not. What do you think about the episode?
I love this episode, and what I like is like it shows you the dark underbelly of the Earth Kingdom. You know what I mean? It's like, you think, but prior to this, we're like, oh, the Earth Kingdom is all right. It's better than the Fire Nation. That's what we're led to believe. But nah, the Earth Kingdom's as evil as the Fire Nation, arguably. You know what I mean? With Long Feng and the Dai Li and stuff, they're pretty evil too. It might be apples and oranges, but.
Yeah, this city is like pretty close. You know, the amount of like sketchy stuff going on, a lot of thought policing going on. I'm not a huge fan of the Dai Li here. Probably not a hot take. I'm not a huge fan of authoritarian governments, I guess. So there you go. But yeah, like it is interesting because so long it's been like, oh yeah, Ba Sing Se, it's an impenetrable city. Like, it's the best city in the world. We all hear all this great stuff about it. And you get there and it's like, actually, it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And Toph is the only one who's like used to it, the sucky city life. So everyone else in Team Avatar is just shocked by it.
Yeah, she's really ready here. Like, she's back in her element. She's like, no, like, later in the episode, she's like, yeah, I'm just getting handled. Like, I know how this whole thing goes. Like, I get it. She's pretty clutch here. I think if we were giving out MVPs, I think I'd have to give it to her just based on, like, everything she knows about the way the city works.
Yeah, facts. I also think Toph is the MVP of this episode, and I love her Judy impression. We'll get to it later on. But well, shall we dive right into it? Because I'm chomping as a bit to talk about it.
Yeah, let's get into it. So we start, actually, they're on these little, like, trains. They're, like, noticing the walls, and they're, like, so excited they're getting there. It's funny because Katara is, like, ready to jinx it. She's like, oh, we made it to Ba Sing Se in one piece, and Sokka gets on her case for saying that. He has, like, all these weird theories that are going to happen, you know, an ocean full of killer shrimp, a Fire Nation spoon, a bunch of weird stuff in Sokka's mind.
Yeah, then Toph asks him if he's been hitting the cactus juice again.
That's a great joke.
Yeah, that was a good callback. I love how they just use cactus juice as, like, this allegory for, like, drugs or alcohol or something. Like,
yeah, like, I'm not sure what hallucinogen it's, like, necessarily supposed to be, but I'm surprised this joke made it in there. It's like, it's a little bit on the nose for a children's show. Are you particularly superstitious, Zach?
No, I'm not superstitious at all. I remember before basketball games, I had a couple of homies in high school who were superstitious, and I was never about that life. What about yourself? Yeah. Are you superstitious?
I'm not superstitious, I would say. There are a few things that, like, I need to do them to feel at ease. Like there are some things, like, I'll try to crack all, like, if I crack my knuckles, which I do quite frequently, I try to crack all of them. And if I don't, like, try all of them and I only do, like, one hand, I just, like, feel off. That's not really superstitious, but I do think if I only did one hand, it'd be bad luck somehow.
I guess
that's, like, sort of superstitious. And then around sports, like, you know, I'm superstitious. I know it doesn't work, but it's fun to believe it.
That's fair.
Yeah. But so they're on this train, and this random guy who's just, like, eating corn but not using his hands or something just, like, sits between Toph and Sokka. And this just, like, reminded me of all the horrors of public transit. Like, I've not gone on a public train in, like, quite a long time. But I just remember there's some crazy things that are going on then. Did you ever have any good public transit stories
there? Yeah, actually, I have one that's not in my notes, but you just jogged my memory. So back in the day, I was a dishwasher. I was a dishwasher in another suburb, basically. So I'd have to take the night bus home from downtown Vancouver to my home, which is in another city called Burnaby. Long story, but basically, I was half asleep, just as, like, 2 a.m. I'm on the bus, and this dude's like, man, you gotta vote for the Liberal Party. They're gonna legalize marijuana, man. You're gonna vote for the Liberal Party. And he's just, like, going off. And what's funny is, like, have you ever read Oliver Twist? So basically, guy's dressed like the Artful Dodger in, like, a suit, like, three times too big and stuff. He's got a suitcase of God knows what. And I'm like, I don't even know if the Liberal Party is even going to legalize marijuana. I don't know if that's the stance to be taken, but I'm half asleep and this guy's going off. So, yeah, that's my public transit story.
It kind of sounds like he's part of the Dai Li or some secret organization. You know, he sounds like he has an agenda at least.
Yeah, I mean, he had a very green agenda, to say the least.
Very green indeed. I was not planning on telling the story. I'm not really sure how it's, like, super relevant, but I took the green line in Chicago, and I would get up, like, really early to get into work because it was, like, pretty far. And I would roll onto some trains, and people would just be, like, on there just smoking, like, smoking drugs on the train. And these were, like, so either they, like, rolled it the night before or they woke up earlier. Like, they woke up, like, I'm on the train at 7. So they woke up at, like, 6:40 to roll it. It's like, oh, my God. Anyway, it truly was the green line. I'll tell you that.
That's so funny. Oh, man. Now I just want to go on a train to Chicago. I'll just be laughing my ass off watching people smoke on the train. Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah. Well, and then you try to, like, change cars because you're like, oh, I don't want to sit and, like, smell that on the whole train ride. And then the next car would have the same thing. You're like, all right, I guess I'll just sit on this one and give up.
Yeah.
Chicago's a great city, so don't be turned off by what I'm saying here. But yeah, the other thing I was going to say is I was on a train one time where a guy was just, like, eating ribs and just going at it. It made me think of this corn guy because, like, so there's, like, a difference between, you know, like, eating some barbecue, which is a little bit messy, and, like, just going in. Like, he was eating it, and, like, he just dropped the bones on the train floor. It was nasty, but I think him and this corn guy could share, and they'd have a full meal with sides and all.
Yeah, it's crazy. I didn't even have this corn guy in my notes because I thought it was such a random thing. And yet, well, we have all these transit stories. You unlocked like these hidden memories I have of transit.
Well, you know, I feel like anyone who like takes public transit realizes how crazy it can get sometimes, because like it's just some people who just like they're just doing their own thing. They don't care that you're around. Like they're going to eat their ribs. They're going to, you know,
smoke their ganja. They're going to do what they want.
They're just going to do what they want. Yeah. You know, who can blame them?
Yeah.
But anyway, they get to the town and we get like, we get this like gigantic city. And as it opens up, you realize like this is not your little crappy town. Like Team Avatar has been going around a few towns. It's been fine. This is something different. Zach, how would you describe the city?
Yeah, it's almost like even though they're like driving through the slums at first, it's still like majestic, basically. I love the music when they first hit Ba Sing Se. It was beautiful. And yeah, it's just like a vast, expansive city, to say the least. By far the biggest city they've been to, I'm pretty sure. The only city that even comes in comparison is Omashu, but it's even bigger than Omashu, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think it's like an order of magnitude larger than Omashu. Like you can like see, like Omashu is like one thing you can see. I don't think you could like get even the panorama, like the fancy one that goes 360 and get the whole thing. Because it just goes so far. Like it's got just like, just as far as the eye can see, you've got towns. And yeah, this is like pretty discouraging for Aang. Like Aang, I think, was hoping to roll up, see Appa just like chilling in the road and be like, great, I have my bison back. But it's not going to be so easy for him.
Nope. He blows his bison whistle, but to no avail.
Yeah, and that is really sad because we've seen that bison whistle come up, and I think that they've done a really good job of having it come up like frequently enough to where I remember it, but it's not like all the time the bison whistle is coming up. But here when they use it, it's super effective because it's just like that last desperation that Appa will just like fly in and save the day like he always does.
Yeah, and we know from Appa's Lost Days that Appa actually hears this and responds to it.
Yes, yes, he does. Yeah. Which is like, it makes it even more sad to know, like, he was just so close and just so far away.
Yeah. But
have you ever lost a pet? Maybe I should have asked you this question when Appa got lost.
No, I never really had any pets besides for a couple of fish, really. And fish don't really count as pets, in my opinion. So there you go.
It's also extremely hard to lose a fish.
Exactly.
If you have, it's like, what are you doing? Like, that's just user error right there.
Yeah. No, I haven't lost any pets. What about yourself? Have you ever lost any?
Yeah, I had a dog named Daisy, and Daisy just loved to run away. And, like, usually, you know, you'd go on your bike and you'd find her. But one time I was, like, at my dad's house, and I came back, and it was, like, Daisy's been gone for a few days. And I was really upset, you know. I kind of felt like taking out some sandbenders myself, and I didn't have, like, a whistle that could work. But, yeah, I never found Daisy, so.
Whoa, damn. So, you guys ever, you never found out what happened? Nothing?
No, there was, like, theoretically, like, a chip in the dog so that we could like track it. So I guess like if the dog has died, in theory we would be contacted because like they might know. So like in my head canon, Daisy's still alive, but at this point, like, I don't know. Hopefully Daisy found another family.
Hopefully some family just boomed her, because yeah, that was pretty depressing. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, I just brought the mood down.
All good. I mean, we'll go back to Avatar, bring the mood right back up. But will we? Because first we get the introduction of Judy. What were your initial impressions of Judy? Because she comes in with some horror movie music, basically.
Yeah, it's also really funny because, like, you know how in superhero movies when there's like a train and you see someone on the other side of the track, you always assume there's going to be one shot where they disappear or something.
Yes.
And so, like, I saw this train, like, the train that they were on, like, goes by out of the station. And you see this woman that we know will be Judy in a second, and just, like, standing in the back. And I was like, all right, she's about to disappear. She's about to pop up behind him. Like, it's about to be some creepy stuff. And it wasn't creepy here, which, like, I don't know. I would have liked the joke. It's just like she pops up on the other side. She's like, hi, my name's Judy.
I mean, they do. They kind of do that with Long Fang a little later, where Long Fang will pop up on the other side of Katara and Toph when they're inside.
That is very true. But yeah, so Judy, just like, she is just like here to manage these people. Like, she's just trying to write out the clock. She's just trying to make the peace. She is the tour guide for Team Avatar. And she's also just going to stall because Sokka's like very intent here. Sokka's like, all right, we have info. We need to meet the Earth King right now. She's not about it.
Yeah, Sokka's in Boston saying now. Everyone is safe here. That's what she tells
him. Yeah. Yeah, the propaganda starts quick. It's like, yeah.
And that's
and every time they say it, it goes like right to a close-up of her face where it's just like all you can see is just like her. And it's just like, yeah. Creepy.
Yeah, and she's peddling a lot of propaganda throughout the whole episode. Like, she's ignoring all of Sokka's pleas about getting to the Earth King and instead just, like, spreading this bossing, say, propaganda all over the place.
Yeah, you would think that they would assign someone a little better at this to the Avatar because, like, you'd have to imagine that the Avatar has, like, more of an agenda than, like, I'd like to live in Bossing Say and just, like, live out my days chilling behind a wall. So, like, it's a little surprising that they get this, like, you know, Judy, who's just kind of, I don't know. Like, I feel like she could have done more to try to dissuade Team Avatar, like, make it seem like, oh, no, I'm on your side. It's just, like, there's normal channels that we have to go through.
You're right. I agree with you. And my headcanon is, like, they weren't prepared for Aang to be coming to Ba Sing Se, so then they kind of, like, had to call an audible, basically, and switch up their plans. But I think you are correct. They should have sent a better Judy to handle this situation. Yeah.
Which is just a weird thing to say, like a better Judy. Like, that's just so creepy.
I know.
Actually, one thing that was super interesting that came up in the post-show recaps Discord is the meaning of Judy means local in Mandarin. So, like, it's not even necessarily, like, a name. It's actually more like a job description.
Oh, interesting.
Like, yeah, like this is just like a Judy, as we will see. And like this is just one of the locals that will like show you around, but it doesn't necessarily like it's not like her identity, I guess.
That's good writing because phonetically Judy sounds like Judy, which is a like Anglo name. So that's pretty interesting that it actually just means local. So you're right, it's just a job title. Who posted that in the Discord? Do you remember?
So I don't know their name. I keep meaning to ask him. It's the Nebraska fan that I'm all in.
Okay. Yeah. Shout out Nebraska fan in the post-show recast patron Discord.
Yeah. Go Huskers.
Yeah.
I'm like only 95% sure that's right. If it's not, I am so sorry.
I don't know if that's correct or not. I'm not going to verify. The University of Nebraska is not that good at basketball, so I don't see them in March Madness too much.
That's fair. One of my friends who like started working with me went to Nebraska. So
that's cool.
I really have no excuse of getting this one wrong. But
yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, super interesting there. So now this this Judy is gonna, you know, live up to her name. She's gonna be the tour guide. She's gonna take them on a little, I guess, tour throughout Ba Sing Se. So they start in the lower ring. And Katara initially asks, she's like, what's the wall for? And Judy's like, oh yeah, there's lots of walls. There's some that protect us and some that maintain order. And it's like, you don't have a better line for this. Like, if you're gonna segregate, you have to come up with something better than like maintain order, like whatever.
Yeah, that's a good word to use here because this city is full of segregation. They just separate the poor people from the less poor people to the rich. Like, the walls are basically designated by class. So it's like the upper class lives in the upper wall, the lower class lives in the lower walls. Pretty effed up for a children's show, like, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, like, seeing all this, it's like, oh yeah, this is where all the refugees come, and as well as people that work with their hands. It's like, yikes.
Poor carpenters. There's no carpenters in the... Don't the people in the upper bowl need, like, carpenters and handy workers?
Well, I'm sure they need them, and they send them right back to the lower... Like, the lower caste, for lack of a better term.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Seeing all this stuff, like, just made me kind of sad. Like, yeah, there's just, like, so many real-world issues that this episode's touching on. Like, authoritarian governments, like, segregation, whether, like, explicit or implicit... And this sort of stuff is, like, heavy for a children's show to deal with. But I think Avatar does a really good job. Like, it shows the evils of what's going on here without, like, really diving so far in for a children's show that it, like, doesn't make sense. Like, within the children's show, it makes tons of sense, and I understand the message.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree completely. That was a great way of putting it, honestly.
Yeah. But then, like, there's also some creepy stuff that's happening in this, like, lower ring. We, for some reason, one of the people is just, like, holding this gigantic sword that, like, if the Dai Li's maintaining order, like, they don't have like TSA pre-check type lines or like TSA security where they're like, you can't have a knife over like 2 feet. This thing was like 4 feet long.
Yeah, he's just like holding it out in the open is the funny part. But I guess in the lower bowl, they just don't care. The crime runs rampant.
You just gotta go for it. And this is like, this really upsets Aang. And I think this is like good to see that, like, you know, we have someone in Team Avatar who's like speaking up for these people. Because he's like, yeah, like, this is so different. Like, this is not how the monks taught us to live. And the monks have to be pissed. Like, the monks are all about, like, getting rid of the, like, earthly possessions. Like, not being confined by that. And here the Earth Kingdom has a city where it's, like, depending on your status is, like, depending on what kind of house you live in.
Yeah, Ba Sing Se is basically a capitalist hellhole, to be honest.
Yep. Yeah.
It's not good.
Let's, burn it all down. Anyway, so now we go back to another part, this staying in the lower ring. We go to Zuko and Iroh, who, because they're new arrivals, obviously have to be here. But this doesn't stop Iroh from buying some stuff. He gets some nice flowers here, some really pretty orange flowers. I was a fan. I would have this arrangement in my home.
Yeah, I wonder why he was he buying these flowers to make tea? Is that why he was buying them?
I don't think so, because he kind of jokes. He's like, oh, like, I want our place to look good in case someone brings home a lady
or something. Oh, true, like that. True, you're right.
But, okay, hear me out. Flowers are not what you want to buy if you're trying to, like, impress the, like, if Iroh was buying it to, like, spruce the place up. Because flowers have an expiration date. Like, you can't use flowers after, like, 2 weeks. So he thinks Zuko has enough pull to find someone within 2 weeks. That's bold of Iroh.
And to Iroh's credit, Zuko basically does almost, or like 2 weeks to a month. You know what I mean? Because he ends up with the girl who visits the tea shop, who's got the burn on her leg in a couple of episodes. So,
yeah, okay. I mean, I guess you're not wrong, but like expected values, like Zuko takes a lot longer to warm up.
I guess Iroh just knew. He knew Zuko had like the game that Sokka apparently has. So,
but like instead of flowers, why aren't you buying like a painting or something that's like lasts forever? Don't put that clock on Zuko.
True, that's a good catch. You should have bought a painting instead, like a nice artisan painting. And there's a lot of artisanal people in the lower bowl. We learned that from Judy. So there you go.
Exactly, exactly. Are you someone who has flowers where you are?
Nah, flowers usually just die in this house, to be honest. I don't got a garden or anything. What about yourself?
I mean, I try and like I'll buy them and then they just die. And like I appreciate them while they're around. I'm just like just so hard to know like, okay, this flower needs water like these days. And like anytime I put something in a pot, it's just like it's just going to die like pretty quickly. Anyway,
yeah,
I'm sure this is not a surprise to people if they know things about me that I was not able to keep flowers alive.
Hey, you're a firebender. You're not a waterbender. So there you go.
Yeah, that's true. Painting would be much more my style, you know, no expiration date on that one.
Facts.
But then, so actually this is something that, this was a great line. I wrote this down. So Zuko's like, I don't want to make a life here. And Iroh says, life happens wherever you are, whether you make it or not. That's like, that's good advice.
Yeah. And Iroh's correct. You have to make the best of any situation you're in. And yeah, this is just another piece of sage, wise advice we get from Iroh that we've been so accustomed to throughout the whole series. One of the many reasons why Iroh's one of my favorite characters, just lines like this.
Yeah, I mean, like this one, like really hit different, I think. Like one of my favorite movies, or my favorite movie ever, is called The Brothers Bloom. And it's like about con men and their like right lives for themselves. And this is like kind of the same sort of message. Like the one of the quotes from that movie is like, there's no such thing as an unwritten life, only a poorly written one. I feel like this is like the same sort of vibe. And when I heard this from Iroh, I was like, dang, all right, I get it. But anyway,
I'm very
impressed
here. No, it's a great line. I have it in my notes as well.
Yeah. Almost more impressive is that Iroh has found them jobs within days. I'm not sure, like maybe he got there like 1 or 2 days ahead of like Team Avatar getting there. So maybe he's got like a 48-hour head start, but he already found a place and a place to work. Like Iroh's moving quick. The housing market here is getting snapped up.
Iroh's a hustler, man. He's like Iroh's for somebody who's been rich for the majority of his life. Iroh's pretty good at living poor. He's going to quickly up the ranks in this tea shop and open up his own tea shop. So kudos to Iroh for growing from like refugee to like tea shop owner within the span of like, what, a couple of months at most? So
yeah, just like a few episodes. And I love that, like tracking Zuko and Iroh through Ba Sing Se and showing like how they go from the lower ring and like kind of work their way up the social ladder is like super interesting. All the social politics is great. Like, I just feel like I could watch just like Ba Sing Se, like inner city politics for days.
Yeah. And lucky us, we got like six more episodes of it. So
that's true. I'll get to watch it for weeks.
Exactly.
Yeah. But then we see Jet, who's not happy to be watching Ba Sing Se, especially because he thinks firebenders are there. He's very upset about this. He saw some hot tea and now he is pissed. So he's trying to, like, you know, gather evidence. He's kind of turning into a private eye here. Private investigator Jet.
Private investigator / stalker, more like it, almost. Am I wrong?
Yeah, stalker's a better term. I don't think that Jet would be a good PI, but stalker seems about up his alley.
Well, yeah, because the thing is, it's like he's still insisting they're firebrenders, and while he's right, like, he should be listening to Smeller be a long shot and just dropping it. Like, you're trying to live a life where you're not focused on, like, killing firebenders for every waking minute of your existence. Like, you already saw how that went poorly in season one, and yet he's still super insistent. And sadly, he's not going to listen to Smeller be in Longshot, and he's going to get arrested and brainwashed by the end of the episode.
It's a pretty big L he's about to take, but just to defend him for a second, like,
I wasn't expecting it to be, yeah, he is going to take a big L, that's true. Continue. Well, yeah. What's your defense of him?
No worries. I think that, you know, he's suffered so much. He's really found it hard to, like, ingratiate himself back into society after the Fire Nation took so much away from him. I think he, like, got to a point where he's like, okay, like, I'm going to set out strong. I'm going to, like, do my own thing in Ba Sing Se. And then the first thing he sees is that firebenders are going to enjoy the same respite from the war as him. Like, it's got to feel unfair. Like, they're the ones who caused the war. They should suffer the consequences. Like, I don't agree with it, but I at least see where Jet's coming from.
That's a good point. I wasn't looking at it from Jet's perspective like that, but honestly, that's fair. And I think if I was in Jet's position, I would probably be acting similarly to him, so I can't necessarily judge him. I don't know if I'd go full on stalker and attack, and I don't know if I would attack them in the middle of their place of work, but I do think I would go full PI and try to sniff them out and see them firebend.
For sure, you gotta go with a long con here. Like, if you're just going with this, like, short thing where he's gonna get upset and attack him, that's terrible. And if you're gonna attack him, at least attack him, like, in their home, take him by surprise. Instead, he just, like, announces, like, I will attack you now, and then attacks, like, it's a losing battle, dude.
Nah, fact, it is a losing battle, honestly.
Just the worst. Anyway, now we continue with our tour of Ba Sing Se. We get to the middle ring. The middle ring is home of the financial district, shops, restaurants, and the university. These are things, you know. I'd spend some time in the middle district. I don't know. I don't really have a ton to say about it.
Nah, I'd spend some time in the middle district too. I'd hope that I'm living in the middle district instead of the lower district or whatever it was called. I've already forgotten, but
the lower ring. I think they're all different rings of the city. It's okay, like it's like a big circular system. Then they also talk about how they, like, met this professor from Ba Sing Se, and like, Sokka here is just great at the transition, because they're like, she mentions a university, and he's like, yeah, we met someone from the university. He got us information about the war that's going to be important, so please get us to the Earth King. And Judy, like, is just totally no-selling. She's like, yeah, history's really fascinating.
Yeah, I was just about to say Judy's no-selling. I have that exactly in my notes. So, yeah, nice. Sokka is welcome to come on this podcast, because what a transition. He's a master.
Yeah.
Look at that. Nice segue by Sokka there. Very impressive stuff. He could be a masterful podcaster.
He really could, actually. I would be very interested to hear the Sokka podcast. I feel like, you know, he has a lot of opinions. A lot of them are bad. I think he'd be canceled within like four or five episodes.
A lot of sexist and misogynist opinions. That's true. Especially early Sokka.
He starts talking and people are like, you know, listening, and they listen back to it and they're like, wait a second, that's just sexism. But you know, I feel like he can yes and. Whereas Judy's just like shooting down suggestions left and right. Like, no, you are not welcome on this podcast.
This is an anti-Judy podcast. All my homies hate Judy.
Maybe we shouldn't, because she's definitely like traumatized and brainwashed. Like, it's not her fault that she just like has no personality outside of like bossing, say, I guess, rep.
That's true, but then I don't know. She could have helped the gang here escape the shit. It's not like the Dai Li's watching her. She's working for the Dai Li. Like, she could have bucked the system here. So I don't know. I don't have too much sympathy for her myself.
But I also think we see in the Lake Laogai episode, like, there's like a room and it's just like a ton of Judy's just like standing around doing nothing. Like, I think these people are like sufficiently brainwashed.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I forgot about that scene in Lake Laogai. Oh,
that scene creeps me out. That's like, that's so scary. That's like, I forget what game it is. There's some video game where like you open a door and it's just like a ton of monsters just like standing there absentmindedly. And then like, if you make any noise, they attack you and you essentially die. Anyway. Those two scenes are just creeping me out.
You're right. Yeah, no, it is. I remember watching that scene for the first time, being like, oh my gosh, wow, this city's just got people brainwashed out the wazoo. Because initially you think it's just like Jet, but then you realize like, no, half the people working for the Dai Li are just brainwashed.
Exactly, yeah. That's it's pretty creepy stuff. But yeah, this is when Sokka like gets really upset, and Toph's just like, look, like we're being handled, like there's nothing you can do about it. Like, let's keep going. We go to a tea shop. What are your thoughts on this tea shop? Like, it just looks sad.
Yeah, it does look pretty decrepit and sad. I love Iroh's dialogue here, where Iroh's like, this tea is nothing but hot leaf juice. And then Zuko's like, that's what all tea is. And then Iroh's like so offended by this comment, because he's like, how could my own nephew say something so horrible? I love the dialogue.
The hot leaf juice line is pretty funny. This whole place is like, it does look like it would serve just hot leaf juice. Like, it doesn't look nice. It's like a bunch of like old wooden benches, like an old, like very dark, dimly lit, like wood interior. Like, it just doesn't seem like a place you'd want to be. This kind of reminds me of, like, I don't know why this is coming to my mind, but like Kung Fu Panda, when they're just like in that noodle shop, that's just like not serving good noodles. Anyway. I don't really remember Kung Fu Panda, so...
I remember Kung Fu Panda, but I don't remember them in the noodle shop. I know that's the beginning of the movie, but... Because when you brought Kung Fu Panda, I was like trying to rack my brain. It's okay, what scenes from Kung Fu Panda do I remember? I remember the Wushu finger hold.
Yeah.
He raises his pinky. I remember that.
Yeah. Anyway, so they're not a huge fan of the tea. But honestly, this guy, this tea shop owner, really lucked out. Like, he's got Iroh, who's just going to be like, great, I'm just going to fix the tea here. And he's going to just go, like, get the whole thing. Meanwhile, Jet's just, like, watching them outside. He's a very bad private investigator. Like, I've seen some of these shows, like, you know, like CSI Miami or whatever, like White Collar, like these types of shows. He would be spotted in a second.
Yeah, and I'm surprised Iroh doesn't notice him earlier, because Iroh is usually pretty astute. I mean, Iroh was able to track Zuko from like while being kilometers behind him. So if he's able to do that, I'm surprised he's not able to sense Jet's presence here.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I guess I'm a little confused, because every time he's about to get ambushed, he like immediately recognizes it. So maybe he knows he's being followed and he just like doesn't want to do anything.
I don't know. Maybe he's just too content making his good tea. So
yeah, no, that's probably true. We continue on with this tour. We get to the upper ring. They finally made it. It's home to all the important people. It's where the cool kids live. And we find out that Team Avatar got invited to the Cool Squad. They're part of the upper ring.
Wow, look at that. They made it. They're part of the bourgeoisie class.
Exactly, yeah. You know, when people come to eat the rich, they will have to dine on Team Avatar.
That was a good joke. Oh, man.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Anyway, they're getting around and they like start to see this giant palace is what it is. It's like the Ba Sing Se Palace, and it looks so much like Tiananmen Square in China. Like, it's clearly like what it's like trying to evoke. I don't know if there's a place that is like even more based off of, but it looks a lot like Tiananmen Square, which is just like, it just like draws the parallels here, like very directly. Like this is supposed to show, like this is the imperialist China for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Which is cool because the Fire Nation is also kind of representative of imperialist China, or at least that's what it feels like.
Yeah, I think that it feels it's got like the Japanese like imperialism vibe where it's like, yeah, like I feel like I've read before that it's like Earth Kingdom's like Imperial China and the Fire Nation's like some earlier era in Japan when they were like being industrial and trying to modernize.
Oh, there you go. Wow, just fact-checking me on the spot. It works out.
It's also an island nation, the Fire Nation.
So oh, think, you're right. No, yeah, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. That's actually fixed my perception of Avatar. So thank you very much for the correction. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Glad to talk old ancient history here on Aang and Nair. But I think it's really relevant here because like we see these like you know, people that are standing around, we hear who, like, the Dai Li are, and we're like, all right, these people are creepy. And when you look up Dai Li, I found out that this is a lieutenant general in the Qing Dynasty that was, like, kind of doing some intelligence-type work, like, kind of keeping things in order. Like, it is really based off, like, historical events, which is cool to see.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Tiananmen Square is where they had, like, in 1988, I think, they had, like, the massacre of protesters and stuff. And to this day, you can't mention it in China. So it's very interesting that they're drawing direct parallels to that. And again, this is a children's show, so that's crazy to me that they're drawing parallels to Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, I agree. It's also where, I took a picture in 2018 when I visited, and my mom, before I went, said, whatever you do, do not make a joke. Please do not make a joke here. And I was like, all right. Like, you know, I joke around. I don't take things too seriously, but I'm not trying to get arrested.
Arrested in China, especially overseas.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be horrible. So,
it would be, that would be pretty bad. So we get into this royal palace are going by, and Aang's like, cool, let's go see the king. And Judy hears like, oh no one just pops in on the Earth King. And it's like, all right, I guess you're just gonna keep handling us. I don't know. I was kind of annoyed at her by this point.
I was annoyed too, because then she continues to go on and she says, oh, your request will be processed in about a month. And they're like, a month? And she's like, actually 6 to 8 weeks, which is not a month. 6 to 8 weeks is a month and a half to 2 months. So that really frustrated. That pissed me off, quite frankly. If she told me a month, 6 to 8 weeks, I'd be like, are you crazy? Are you insane? That's not a month. That's more than a month. So my basic math skills came into play. And I was like,
I love if like, you know, she's clearly giving you the runaround and you're just like, come on, like at least tell me how many months it's going to be. Like I can do simple division. Like I know that you're lying to me. That's hilarious. That's what you're upset about.
Yeah. It pissed me off.
Yeah. The other thing here that where she says like one does not just pop into the Earth King. It really reminded me of that Lord of the Rings meme. That's like one does not simply blah, blah, blah. I thought that was very funny. I'm sure that this has been made before, but like, it would be funny to have that meme. It's like one does not simply pop in on the Earth King.
I bet if you posted that on the Avatar, The Last Airbender subreddit, you get a lot of updutes.
All right. I'll post it. I have to re-download. Or I guess I can use my computer. I had like a meme maker on my phone in like high school, and I would like make just the worst memes, but I would find them so funny. Like I would just laugh so hard. They just weren't good.
I made some pretty dumb memes myself back in the day. I used to always add impact font on everything. And then,
Yep. I'm glad to know I'm not alone here. So they're going to have to wait a few weeks. That's too bad. They're really trying to, you know, push to try to get to see the Earth King. And Aang eventually gives up. He's like, all right, if we're going to be here a long time, let's go get Appa. And Judy's like, great, let's go. And it's like, no, we don't need you. And she's like, no, you need me. And there you go. Now they got Judy.
Yeah, they got Judy. So they go on here and then they start to ask questions around the city related to both Appa and the war. It's usually Aang asking about Appa and then Sokka asking about the war. But they get nothing because Judy just kiboshes it real quick. So first they go to this animal seller. And then Aang asks him if there's a black market or anything of the sort. And then he stares at Judy and she sees her like mouth closed, shaking her head. And he's like, no, there's no such thing as a black market. That would be illegal. And like,
yeah.
In like an obviously scared tone. So yeah, Judy just crashing the gang's plans here, not letting them do anything really.
I love what he says when he's like, that would be illegal. It's like, that's why we're asking you about it. Like, I don't know. Like, is there a better line that he could have used? I guess probably not, but it's just funny phrasing.
Yeah, I guess to be fair, he was scared to like step on the Dai Li's toes. He knows how they operate, so he didn't want to get brainwashed like Jet later on in the episode.
That's true. Then they go and they ask a university student after striking out on the pet store owner. They're trying to talk about, like, if they ask him if there are any sandbenders or nomads or anything. And they're like, no, but you should ask the professor. And it's like, oh, but he dead. Like, you cannot ask him because he's in a library underground. He's deceased, my friend.
I mean, maybe he's still alive up to this point, or unless he died instantly.
That's true.
But then he's still underground, very far away. So you're correct.
He's not coming back.
No.
He gone. Anyway, yeah, and then Sokka's like, okay, like, and who do we ask about the war with the Fire Nation? And again, like, Judy's like, no, don't be asking about that. And here's what I don't get. So the first time I get it, maybe they weren't prepped. Like, why can't Katara just be, like, looking at Judy's face the whole time, being like, don't do anything sketchy, I'll know you're sketchy.
Yeah, I don't know.
Is that too much to ask?
No, you're right, but then Judy, at least, this is probably some of her best work in the episode. She's able to just shut down all these conversations without anybody. Sokka almost notices at one point. He like quickly turns to Judy and then she like stops shaking her head instantly. But unfortunately for Team Avatar, they weren't able to notice Judy just throwing a wrench into their plans.
Yeah. Yeah. But eventually Judy's like, all right, we tried. We failed. Let's go home. So they go home. They get back to their house. And Sokka's like, all right, let's, try to knock on the fellow door. You know, the person probably thought they were, like, asking for butter, maybe some flour. But instead, no, it's the Avatar. The guy, I think his name is Pong, is, like, super excited that they're there. Sokka starts talking about, like, hey, like, why will no one talk about the war? And this guy immediately is just being, like, all sketched out.
Yeah, he's like, war? Scared? What do you mean? And then Toph notes that she can feel him shake, which is a cool use of her earthbending. So she can tell when somebody's lying and she can tell when somebody's scared.
Yeah, that is pretty useful. She has a lot of talents. I feel like, she's just like so versatile. Anyway, so then like this guy's just like, oh, like I can't tell you anything. Like I'm just some like random, like small time bureaucrat. I've wanted to get in this house for so long. I'm not trying to leave. It's like, poor guy, like, I feel for you. Don't do anything to get in trouble. Like, you know, get that bread, work your government job, live in the nice house.
Like, true, he did nothing wrong, really. I don't think so.
No,
he's just trying not to get brainwashed like Judy and Jet. So.
Exactly. And he gives him good advice. He's like, don't mention the war and, like, stay away from the Dai Li and, like, you'll be fine. I think he's, like, he's an above-average person here in Ba Sing Se.
Yeah, true. He's nothing offensive about him.
Yeah. Then we get back. We go home with Iroh and Zuko. Then Iroh suggests that they get a pot of tea. And I've not worked at a place that's like, you know, made food. Like I've never worked in like that type of place. But I feel like if I did like, you know, serve tables or like if I was a cook, the last thing I would want after getting home would be to eat or drink that same thing. Like that has to just be the case. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, but I guess Iroh, he's so passionate about his love for tea. It just doesn't affect him. He's still able to drink it all day and all night.
It would just be so unappealing to me to like work all day, like brewing people's coffee or something, and then going home and making myself like an instant pot or something, like some crappy coffee. I guess Iroh's coffee is good, but still, I'm not about it. But yeah, so Zuko's like saying, no, I'm sick of tea. Very reasonable. I agree here. But this is not the important part of the scene. The important part is that he's trying to find some spark rocks to heat up the water. And we get to Jet, who has mischievously stolen the spark rocks. Ooh, bad boy Jet.
Bad boy Jet indeed. But Iroh is so nice and kind. he just borrowed the neighbor's spark rocks. He said they were such kind people.
Yeah. And like, so I get why they do this, because like they don't want Jet to like see him firebend definitively. But I'm not actually sure what that changes. Because even if he says, oh, I saw him, like, I saw him firebend, I stole his spark rocks or whatever, like, the police would still be like, no, you're the problem maker here. So, like,
That's true. I guess it's because of Iroh's mishap last time, where he heated the tea right in front of everybody.
That's true.
He learned his lesson, and now he's not going to firebend in the city anymore. And I think Zuko's in the same boat, where Zuko and Iroh have just decided not to firebend at all in the city.
Yep. That is a very fair statement. That makes a lot of sense to me. He just like goes, he gets some of the neighbor's rocks. I find that hilarious that he just like pops in. I just find it so funny that they're just like already on good terms with the neighbors. They're just like, hey, can I borrow them real quick?
Honestly though, Iroh would be the best neighbor ever. Like, I'd love if Iroh was my neighbor personally. Just like, oh, hey, what's up, old man? You got tea at the ready? He'd be serving kids tea. He'd just be the best neighbor ever.
Exactly. I'm sure, like, although whenever he comes over for dinner, you gotta cook like a few extra portions.
True. Yeah. He is a portly chap after all.
Exactly. The next morning we go back to Team Avatar, and Katara is the one who cracks the idea this time. She knows that they're gonna see the Earth King by sneaking into a party for his pet bear. And here we get a funny line making fun of the different portmanteau animals we've seen. What do you think of this scene, Zach?
Yeah, I like this scene. Is it a skunk bear, an armadillo bear, a gopher bear? Nope, it's just bear. And also, I really like the bear for some reason. I don't know. It's such a goofy looking thing. We'll get into it in the next couple of scenes, but the bear is just hilarious. Just the Earth King's pet bear, just chilling, eating all the food. It's like a fat baby, to be honest. It's just sitting at the head of the table, just eating everything. So, yeah, I like the bear, but
it's a baby that can rip into like an entire like pig all at once or whatever was on the table. Like, it ripped that thing in half.
Facts. Honestly, it's a very dangerous baby if it is one. And then here's where we get the Judy impersonation from Toph, where it's like, one doesn't just pop in on the Earth King. It's like exactly in Judy's voice. So.
Yeah. Toph does a good job here. But then I think it was very funny for the bear scene. And then I think Toph shines again here. They're like, oh, Katara's thinking, you know, oh, we're just going to sneak him with the crowd. This probably would work, you know, even in Omashu, I'm sure it'd work, but not here. You know, they take stuff seriously. And Toph's like, look, you cannot fit in. You don't know like all the ins and outs of society, which is so funny because as she's like, lecturing them on this, she's just acting like a complete bum. You know, she's sitting back in her chair eating pastries. She's burping. I'm sure she's like picking her nose.
She was picking her nose and scratching and doing a bunch of unsightly stuff, to be honest. But she says she chose to leave she learned how to live in high society and chose to leave it. Whereas these guys, the rest of Team Avatar, have never even lived in high society. And then I love Aang and Sokka's impersonations of high society. I don't have Aang's line written down, but I have Sokka's here. It's like, oh, Avatar Aang, how do you do? Go on. That almost sounds like Mr. Mosby, to be honest, the way they were talking.
Yeah, he's using so many buzzwords. He's just like, you know, making stuff up. He's saying a lot without actually saying anything. And I find it so funny that they have these little lines here. But yeah, like I've never been great with manners. You know, like I know how to not be actively rude, but I never went to like manner school or whatever it's called. Like a few people in my class did in like fifth grade. And I like my mom was like, no, like you're fine. Just don't be rude. Did you ever go to anything like that?
No, I mean, that sounds pretty bougie. I don't know if I'm ever, I don't know. I'm lucky. I never had to display like the best table manners and stuff like that. So, like, but I'm a pretty polite, affable person, I like to think, so I never had any issues with that either.
Yeah, like, I feel like it's just common sense. I mean, we're not trying to fit in with the elite of the elite. We're middle ring. We're just trying to go to the shops and restaurants.
I'm like lower middle ring, so yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but, like, I think I told my mom, I was like, oh, should I go to this manners class? She's like, I'm not going to pay money. Like, we don't have money to spend on manners class. Like, yeah, I don't think that was like ever an option for us. So, you know, we're out here, we're middle ring, that's fine. But yeah, so we do get Aang and Sokka being their jokey self. Do you think that you could pull it off if you had to? Could you fit in with a high society?
I don't know. It's so, like, against my nature. I could, maybe, but it would be so obvious to, like, anybody who knows me that I would be putting on an act and not being my true self. What about yourself? Yeah. Do you think you could fit in with, like, these high society, bourgeoisie, classist folk?
As soon as I'm wearing a tie, I'm out. So, like, if it's, like, if I can wear, like, my comfortable shoes, probably a baseball hat, then I'm fine, but... Like, ties where I draw the line. I wore ties a lot in high school. Like, I did, like, debate sometimes, and we'd, like, dress up. It's just, like, it's not fun. There's no point.
Yeah, I'm not a tie guy either myself. I was just watching a video. I don't know if you know basketball player Jason Tatum. When he was 12 years old, he made a video called How to Tie a Tie. And that's, like, been going viral. Because he's just... That's been going viral recently. That's, like, 700,000 views on YouTube. Just 12-year-old Jason Tatum. Giving a tie tutorial on how to tie a tie.
What knots is he covering?
I think he covers, like, he's young in the video, but he covers, like, maybe a Windsor, half Windsor, something like that. I'm not sure of all the knot types, but yeah.
Yeah, I never, like, really learned how to regular tie a tie. The only knot I ever learned how to do was the Trinity knot, which is, like, a knot that, like, just looks like a triangle. Like, instead of down, it's, like, up. I'll send you a picture later, but that's the only knot I learned. I was very far behind on, like, a lot of these basic life skills.
See, I'm farther behind than you because to this day, I do not know how to properly tie a tie. I've done it, like, once properly with the tutorial, and then besides that, I've not been able to get it down. I used to work in the movie industry, and I'd have the people on set just, like, tie the tie for me.
Yeah, like, I feel like anytime you need a tie... like, to get tied, you can ask someone who's around, or you can look at the tutorial then and do, like, a decent job. Like, I don't know. I feel like that's a skill that's gone that you don't need anymore. Did you ever have to learn cursive in school?
Yes, when I was, like, in the first grade. But then I just learned how to do my signature and nothing else. I could write in cursive, like, gun to my head, and I think so, but it would be hard. So I just know how to sign my name in cursive, and that's it.
I only know, like, the letters in my name in cursive.
Yeah,
I legitimately, like, I can kind of picture what a K looks like, but if you ask me to write one, I think I would just, like, take whatever, like, threat you're offering me.
K is easy. It's like S and R are harder, I think.
See, R I got. R, I'm all over it. Yeah. But the K, I can see it in my mind. I just don't know how.
K is just a normal K. I'm pretty sure it's like a normal K connected to the other letter.
But how does it? I feel like when I am thinking about it right now, there's one extra loop. Anyway, I'll practice. I'll get a handwriting sample. We can sort this all out.
I didn't know we were gonna go on a tangent about cursive this episode, but hey, here we are. Always something new every episode.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like, you know, if we don't have just one random tangent, then it wasn't an ang in their episode.
Laugh back.
Yeah. If anyone has nice cursive, it is very appealing to look at. Like, I love really good handwriting, like cursive or whatever the alternative is, regular, I guess. Both are great. Like, I love good handwriting. I just don't have it myself.
No, same. My handwriting's pretty messy, but I always say my handwriting, at least it's legible. That's what I always say. My good friend Pat, actually, in English class, he would write essays totally in cursive, like the whole thing. So he must have gone to cursive training when he was a kid. Yeah.
Wow. Maybe even some manner school. Pat, with the workout tips and the cursive.
Yeah, true. Honestly, I should get Pat on the podcast one of these days. He just bought a Blue Yeti mic, too. So
let's get him on. I feel like he's got enough, like, things in his background and, like, you know, consistent listener. Yeah, Pat, slide in Zach's DMs. Let's get you on an episode.
Yeah, true. I'll talk to him tonight, see if he's down.
Sweet. Back to the Avatar. Toph says, nope, there's no way that Aang and Sokka are going to be able to pull it off. You're busboys at best. So while they're changing, we see a nice game of rock, paper, scissors, essentially, but with the four elements. Perfect. A game with rules. I understand this one. Apparently, earth beats fire.
Yeah. Wouldn't water beat fire? I guess there's no water in this game. It's probably just earth, air, and fire.
Because then what would happen? No, probably. So I guess earth beats fire, fire beats air, air beats water, water beats earth, and then earth and air tie, and water and air tie. That's my guess.
That's a good guess, honestly. That makes sense. Like, if this was a real-life game, that's how it probably should go down. But who knows? Yeah. We've seen some nonsensical, or in your opinion, some nonsensical games.
In my opinion, Zach, are you challenging?
No, this has been litigated.
We went over this.
No, you were correct. They were not really playing a game. So, no, you're right. I'm just stating, like, in episodes prior, we've had games that haven't seemed to have any rules. So maybe
exactly.
This is... Yeah.
The thing I was really curious about, though, is we see fire and earth, which seem like the easiest hand motions. Like, you know, earth is just a fist. It's regular rock. Fire's like your fingers are like making flames. Water and air got to be hard to come up with some hand signals for. Like, my guess is the writers just didn't create them because they're not easy to come up with. And that's why we saw earth and fire.
Yeah, that makes sense, honestly. Because with water, what would you do? Like a wave with your hands? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess you could do like the wave, like, you know, having your hand go like up and down, like in a wave. But then like air and water kind of look the same. Like, I don't know how you distinguish that, like one's wet and one's like a breeze.
Yeah, true. I don't know how you would either.
Maybe when you play water, you have to like spit on your hand and do it. And so it's like,
I'm never playing water if that's a rule of a game.
Oh. See, but then water just becomes OP, and anyone who plays water, it's like, oh wow, they're committed to this game. Like, they want to win.
Nah, facts. I'm never playing water if we're playing this game.
All right, good to know. Good to know. I'm ready to win then. But then we see these. We see our Toph and Katara. They come out of the room. They're wearing these like ornate Earth Kingdom dresses. They each have one of those like fans in front of their faces. Full thing of makeup on all over, and they start giggling. Aang here is just like, he's just like floored. He's like, he's just like, wow, you look amazing.
Yeah, he says he looks beautiful, and then, or she looks beautiful, and then Toph responds, like, slaps Katara and is like, don't talk to the commoners. Yeah. Which I thought was pretty funny.
Great joke. Yeah.
Yep. And then at the end of this scene, did you notice Momo pops in with the robe that Aang and Sokka were using to when they're acting all bougie? You just see, like, you hear like the king's noise, and you just see Momo in the robe, which I thought was a funny little joke in the background.
Yeah, Momo's been doing some funny stuff this episode. Like, later in the episode, Momo like tries to hide under a hat and scooch away. Earlier in the episode, when they're in the lower ring and they see the sword, Momo like pops his little head back and like getting scared. Momo's out here with the physical comedy. We love Momo.
Yeah, we love to see it.
Yeah. The next thing we get to is we have Smellerbee having a friend intervention. Friend intervention? Is that what Allie called it? I feel like Allie said this on an NGOG podcast and it didn't stick. So I was trying to make it the reference, but then I just messed it up.
I'm sorry. I'm not caught up on NGOG, so I haven't heard, sadly.
Oh, it's been great the past few weeks. So if you think that we don't talk about Avatar a lot, they just don't talk about NGOG. But the banter between them is exquisite. It's amazing.
I love Allie and Akiva. They're great. So
yeah. But yeah, so then like we have this friend's intervention. That can't be right. Anyway, Smellerbee tells Jet that he needs to stop. He's becoming too obsessed. It's not very healthy. And Jet's like, yeah, this just like sends Jet over the deep end. He's like, look, you don't know what's going on here. The Fire Nation's like screwed us all. They're like wiping people off the map. It's like, I'm gonna get evidence here. And he's just like, cool, like, it's right now or never. Terrible idea.
Yeah, I don't understand why he has to confront them right now. And just, especially with your friends telling you otherwise, it's like, the thing with Jet, he really doesn't value the opinions of Smellerbee and Longshot, in my opinion. He's always going, he sees himself as the leader, and he's always going to do what he feels is right, regardless of what his teammates feel.
Yeah, well, maybe if Longshot actually spoke up, you know, he might be able to get some words in.
True, and stop him. Longshot there. Does speak in words in, like, season 3, right? Like, he says something in the series.
I do think that he, like, I think he has, like, one line. I don't remember it.
If you're Longshot here, now, you're right, actually. I didn't think of that, but now is the time to speak up. You're not a mute. Like, you can speak, so.
Yes.
Longshot, like, should be talking here. I agree.
Now is the time where you're like, Jet, stop. And, like, I feel like that would have gone far, but instead what we get, like, or maybe we should create like a what if series, like similar to the Marvel one that's coming up, Or I guess we can add it to our Choose Your Own Adventure book.
Ooh, good call. Yeah, we got to write that. that's like some homework for me and Jacob, writing an Avatar Choose Your Own Adventure. What's up?
I forgot to tell you, I got the Kiyoshi novels, and we should actually have a book club.
I'm down. Yeah, we could do it for the patrons. We could do it for something. That's cool.
All right, we'll discuss it. I think it'd be a lot of fun. So yeah, maybe we can. We'll come up with something. I think it'd be fun.
Or it could be in between season 2 and season 3 as well. So
That sounds great. Let's put that together. Anyway, I'm very excited to read it. I'm gonna go on vacation for a few days. I'm gonna start knocking them out. I'm excited.
Nah, they're solid. I really like what they do. And Kiyoshi is a very good protagonist, I feel like, just like Aang and Korra.
I was also reading something that like she trained the Dai Li. Like, is that in the books or is this like extra lore?
I don't remember her training the Dai Li. I could be wrong. Maybe she trained something that like ends up turning into the Dai Li. Because I know like the Beifong family existed even in the Kiyoshi novel. So like the name of Beifong is very powerful even back then. So,
all right. Well, I'll come with my my sources next week about how the Kiyoshi and Dai Li connection reading something about it.
I'll have to reread it if we ever podcast about it just to make sure my memory is fresh and stuff because I'm a forgetful man myself. I read it six months ago.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. But anyway, so like Jet's gonna burst in. It's right when the tea shop owner's like ready to give Iroh a raise, like after day one. like he's been doing great here, but instead we have this hooligan busting in the tea shop, accusing him of being firebenders, and they're ready to fight. I think it's very great that even though Iroh and Zuko have only been here for a few days, the customers in the tea shop are like, no, he works here. Like, he's not going to do anything. They're not firebenders. Like, these people just, like, trust him immediately.
Yeah, because then Jet is like, I saw Iroh heating his tea, to which a customer responds with the obvious, well, yeah, he works in a tea shop, so.
facts. but then, like, Jet's like, all right, time to destroy you. Zuko's like, great, let's fight. Zuko is probably itching for a fight here. Zuko's ready to go. He like immediately starts, he like pulls a table in front of him. An ambulance is going by.
All good, we can wait for the ambulance. Yeah, I could hear it. Ooh. It's pretty loud, but it's all good. Because then what ends up happening is Zuko grabs a customer's swords and starts to fight Jet. My question to you is, like, doesn't this make Zuko look more suspicious, displaying his, like, amazing sword skills? Doesn't that make him look more like, why is this random refugee so proficient with the sword? I don't know. If I were him, I wouldn't have engaged and just let, like, the police handle it.
Yeah, I think he's got a fine excuse. Like, he clearly has a burn on his face, so he can say, like, oh no, like, I was a swords fighter and I got burned by the Fire Nation. Like, I feel like there's a story.
That's fair.
But yeah, all I know is that Jet just got carted off in an ambulance by my road. I just heard it.
Well, that's good. At least he's still alive in our world.
Well, for now, he's about to go get brainwashed. anyway, they really start fighting, and it's pretty funny here that they like start fighting, and one of his first moves is to like get a table and kick it at him. Like Zuko's first move is to destroy the table. Like, I agree that table needs upgrades, but you probably shouldn't go around destroying stuff.
True, you work in this place, probably coming out of Zuko's next paycheck. Iroh's just raking in all the money, meanwhile Zuko's toiling away and having tables taken out of his paycheck. Zuko must not be enjoying life in the tea shop right about now.
And you know, in the lower ring, there's no minimum wage. Like, these people work on tips. They have to. Like,
yeah,
100%. They're definitely, they're in the evil tip culture. Anyway, they get back. We go back to the Team Avatar. They're trying to get into this meeting. Toffier shows her little Beifong badge, tries to, you know, show her class. And the guard's like, no, get out of here. Like, I don't care who's waiting on you. You got to get out of line. Mad respect.
Yeah, this guard doesn't give two hoots about the Beifong name. Worked on the passport lady, but it won't work on this guard right here.
Exactly. And this kind of makes sense because my guess is that, the Dai Li is a lot scarier than the Beifongs. That's my guess here.
Yeah, I agree, honestly. I mean, and then Katara and Toph run into Long Fang, who seemingly helps them get inside after Katara makes up this white lie, but little did they know Long Fang was keeping tabs on them the whole time.
Yeah. Sorry, there's another... I wonder what's going on. Anyway...
somebody was smoking on the train, set it on fire.
Oh, man. The Green Line is...
yeah, the Green Line's burning up.
Anyway, yeah, so we get introduced here to Long Fang. And Long Fang is going to be in here for the next few episodes. He's ahead of the Dai Li, as we'll find out in a bit. But one thing that is just blowing my mind is who this actor is. So this is like a, you know, a character that we'll see a few times. It's voiced by Clancy Brown. Zach, do you know who else Clancy Brown voices?
Is it Mr. Krabs?
It's Mr. Krabs. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, he's a talented actor, though. He was also in Shawshank Redemption, so he's been around before. So yeah, I mean, that's surprising. But hey, he was working on another Nickelodeon show. They were able to just get him on, and look at that. Clancy Brown with the intimidating antagonist voice.
I mean, I know that Mr. Krabs works his employees hard, and he's like a little bit greedy. But like the vibe of Mr. Krabs versus like head of the Dai Li, like Long Fang is like a whole different kind of evil than Mr. Krabs. Like Mr. Krabs is like a little selfish. Long Fang's like pure evil.
Nah, you're 100% right. And that's the thing. These voice actors are so versatile, I find. Like even Gray DeLeo going from like Vicky to Azula. Like sure, Vicky and Azula are like different, are like similar evil characters, but in my opinion, they're pretty different. She does a great job with both of those voices.
Yeah, or even like Daphne in so many of the Scooby-Doo films that Felipe and I talk about. It's like every time I'm like, that's wild. That's like the same person that's like playing some evil characters, like also solve mysteries.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess voice actors are just talented.
No, they're very much so. And you notice it's like a lot of the same voice actors on a lot of different shows.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
They get into the party. We see the bear. The bear's just like chowing down. This is like Momo at that place in Omashu, and Momo's just eating as much food as it can. This bear's just chowing down here.
He's taking all the good stuff. That's my favorite line. Sorry to interrupt, but he's like, quiet. You don't know what I had to do, what I had to do to get seats this near the bear. Like, I don't know. This scene just had me cracking up. I don't know why. It's so stupid, but it just had me chortling.
No, I thought this was hilarious too. And we see the bear, who we later find out is named Bosco. Bosco the bear. And he's just like chowing down. I would not want to sit next to the bear. I feel like you'd have to pay me a lot of money to have the seat next to the bear.
Yeah, I would not want to sit next to the bear either. Because what if he gets a little hungrier with all the food in front of him and starts chowing down on some people? I don't know. Yeah. I would not want to be sitting close to the bear.
I hear ya. But we get into the party. Long Fang introduces himself. Katara then like comes up with some names. Her alias for Toph is Dumb. Which like I know that we make fun of like Mr. and Mrs. Fire from Sokka, or like Pip and Pop's a Pip and Papa's Scott Balapagus. That's a hard name to say.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna try it.
Anyway, but Dumb, that's like one of the worst.
It's not Dumb, it's Dung, which is even worse. D-U-N-G. So it's Dung.
That is worse.
Yeah, it is worse because Dung, as we know in English, is another term for poo, usually animal feces. So yeah. And then Toph immediately after being called Dung grabs like one of Katara's braids and yanks on it, so she's obviously unhappy with being called Dung.
Yeah, as I would be too. But then she like tries to give Long Fang the slip, tries to be like, oh yeah, we'll find our family, and he's like, no, like it'd be rude for me not to, like you can't abandon you without finding your family, like let's keep looking. So they are a little bit trapped. Aang and Sokka realize that they're probably not getting in there. They're hiding behind a lion turtle statue, which I think was interesting. But they realize they're not going to be able to get in there. So instead, they're going to decide to go in and be the busboys. They're going to like steal some jackets, I guess, and go around and serve some food. Is it not like a big tell that the busboys are 12 years old, or is that normal?
What do you mean by that? Like, would Sokka look too old to be a busboy? Is that what you're saying?
Too young, I think. Like, Aang looks so young. I would expect it's like, why is the server like a child?
Yeah, but it's Ba Sing Se. I wouldn't be surprised if they have child servants in this dystopian city. So
segregation and child slaves. Wow, what a society.
We live in a society. Yeah, not a good one.
Terrible. Anyway, they go back. We keep going back and forth between the fight between Zuko and Jet and Team Avatar sneaking in. I really think this does disservice to the fight, because I know like we're doing the same thing in the podcast, but like it is like the fight is interesting, but it's broken up here in so many different pieces that some of the interesting things like get broken up and you don't really get to see it build and it loses its flow. What did you think about this fight getting broken up?
I think you summed it up perfectly. I did not like them cutting away from this fight and then cutting back to it. Because this, if we got this fight in full, it would be a great fight. Like, I kind of want to watch the YouTube highlights of this fight rather than watching it like the way it is. Because, for example, they have this slow-mo matrix shot of like Zuko cutting the grain inside Jet's mouth. And I think this is a good fight. Honestly, I would rate, if they had this fight in just one chunk, I would rate it higher than what I am going to rate it, sadly.
I totally agree with that, because like we even have Jet, who's like that classic trash talker. Like in the NBA, there's so many good examples, but it's like he's just like trash talking him. He's getting in his head. He's like, oh, I wish you could hit me with the fire blast right now. And he's like joking around. We also have the thing where he takes his two hook swords and he swings both of them at once, which is like super cool. There's so many cool moments of this fight, but I feel like it just loses momentum every time. Because yeah, we see like, we see them like fight and we see them go and they have a little more fighting here, but then we just go right back to Team Avatar, which is a little too bad. I feel like we lost the momentum.
Yeah, no, I agree. And then Aang and Sokka bump into Katara and Sokka, but then they also, or Katara and Toph, but they also bump into Judy, who then, Judy's just clumsy here. She just like shoves Sokka, who then bumps into Aang, who then drenches his tea all over a random party goer.
Well, Judy has to realize, like, I am dead. Like, she knows, like, if I don't get out of this, like, I will die. So she, like, yes, she is a little bit clumsy, but, like, I don't know. When I get nervous and, like, I'll get nervous about, like, being a minute late to work or, like, if I, like, you know, might have said something a little bit rude to someone, like, that makes me get a little bit nervous. If I knew, like, death is impending, man, I'd be pushing people all out of the way.
Nah, facts. And yeah, but death is impending here. And I love how when Aang airbends, he airbends to get the tea off this woman and reveals his identity as the Avatar. And then the music slowly comes to a halt. And then you see Judy's face go from her like contorted smile of like, to like a look of horror as her smile like slowly dissipates and turns into a frown. I just love the musical cues and the way they like wrote this scene. It's excellent stuff.
Yeah, it is really funny. The other thing is, like, Aang, like, to reveal he's an airbender, like, just absolutely, like, air dries the person. Like, he's, like, one of those things that you get at, like, a public bathroom where you put your hand under it and it, like, blows hot air. But it, like, immediately, like, smudges the makeup, like, messes up the hair of this guest. And the guest is like, oh my gosh, the Avatar is here. That just shows how much pull Aang has. But I thought that was, like, hilarious little bit.
No, it was. And it's like, it's so crazy how even in this high society, the Avatar is like seen as like higher than all of them because they're so excited to mingle with the Avatar.
Yeah. Yeah. One really cool thing. So the plan is like Aang is going to go like distract everyone. Sokka is going to try to find the king. Aang like takes the water out of the different cups and he creates like a globe that's like glowing in different colors. And it's so cool. Like, I don't know what he was doing, like what kind of waterbending it was, but that was really, really cool. I don't know how Katara taught him that well.
I think it wasn't that it wasn't water in the cups. I thought it was like different colored drinks. So it was like a bunch of like teas and stuff. And then each drink was a different color. And then he was bending all of it.
That would make a lot of sense. Yeah,
I could be wrong, though. I could be wrong.
No, I what you said, like, is just like so. Yeah, it just makes so much sense.
Yeah.
We go back quickly to this fight. This was really cool. I don't know why they were fighting back to back, but they end up like fighting back to back and then turning over one shoulder to strike and then turning over the other shoulder. And you kind of get this like circular dance that's going on here. It was very pretty to look at. I have to imagine that one of them could have fought better and like turned around and just like stabbed him, but it was pretty cool looking.
Nah, it was. And then we get the line of this crazy kid attacked the finest tea maker in the city. And poor and then Iroh like blushes. He's like, oh shucks. And then Jet gets arrested while Smellerby and Longshot look on from the crowd.
Which like brutal betrayal. Like I get that Smellerby and Longshot didn't want this to happen. They probably don't want to like get, you know, their whole minds washed as well. But it is a little bit sad here that they just, like, fade into the crowd as the Dai Li agents take Jet away.
Yeah, it is. It's sad. I feel for Smellerby a long shot. They tried to get Jet off of this path, but he was too steadfast and wouldn't listen to them. It's like when you have a friend who you know is going down not the best path, and you're trying to pull them in, and they're just not listening, not receptive to any criticism. Mm-hmm. It's sad.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. Yeah. We go back to the palace. We see, so many guards walk in, like 20 or 30 guards or something. Like, it's a lot of people. And we see the Earth King. And this is the first shot we see of the Earth King. What are your thoughts on this little nerd?
Well, you have some thoughts, so just based on that two-word description. Yeah, the Earth King is kind of a meek-looking individual. He just seems like a weak-looking guy. Just a normal, ordinary person, though, at the same time.
Yeah, like, I think he, like, screams bureaucrat to me. Like, we see King of Omashu, Bumi, who, like, looks a little bit old, obviously, but, like, he's actually built, he's actually a great earthbender. And then we see this guy, and, like, you know, honestly, he looks like, he looks closer to me than, like, I look to Bumi, so I shouldn't be too harsh on him. But, like, he's not what I would expect if I'm thinking, like, Earth King.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He must have been born into the role, is what it is.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Like, 100% he was definitely born into the role. Yeah. But so then we get, like, a bunch of people. Aang starts to approach them. As Aang approaches them, we start to see the Dai Li agents start to take a few people out of the crowd. We see Sokka get taken away by a few Dai Li agents. And then we see some of these weird-looking rock hands go to Katara and Toph and just, like, swoop them out of the way. And this is pretty smooth here.
Yeah, the rock hands. That's some pretty interesting earthbending. I wouldn't have thought to, like, create rock hands and just grab people with them. And they're able to do this subtly enough where nobody notices Katara, Toph, Sokka, and Aang just getting taken out of the crowd.
Yeah, it's also a little bit weird that Toph doesn't recognize this. Like, I feel like she can typically see earth in the air, like, when it's hurling towards her normally. Maybe she's just, like, not ready for it, but I feel like if Toph was on her game, she would, like, feel the vibrations, that she would, like, be able to feel the earth and, like, know, like, oh, this is the trajectory.
Yeah, I'm surprised Toph wasn't able to notice this either. That's a very astute observation on your part.
I think she just got caught by surprise. That's my guess.
That's fair.
Because otherwise, like, I feel like she would be on top of this. But then, like, all of the people are taken away. Even Momo, who's hiding under a hat, is found. And then Longfang introduces himself to the Avatar and says, "Hi, nice to meet you. Let's go talk." This is very intimidating here from Longfang.
Yeah, Clancy Brown's voice acting in this next upcoming scene is really good. I think the speech he gives, very dystopian is what it is.
Yeah, and like mixing this with the Jet like interrogation / brainwashing is like very, very interesting here. So we get into the library, we have Team Avatar and Longfang talking. At the same time, we're also cutting behind, we're going to Jet, he's like being brought into a room, and like in this room, there's a few Dai Li agents. And it's very interesting how they juxtapose this and they show like the message that Longfang is giving as well as like the sort of evil that the Dai Li is executing. But yeah, so Team Avatar says, like, we have some important stuff for the Earth King. We know that there's, like, gonna be some important stuff. There's some stuff here. And Longfang's like, we don't have time for that. Like, we have too many day-to-day activities. We have to protect the cultural heritage of Ba Sing Se.
Yeah, and Longfang here, it's like, Katara is the one who notes it. The king is just a figurehead. He's just your puppet. And then Longfang is like, well, actually, it's not like that. But in reality, that's exactly what it is. The king doesn't do anything. He has no power. In reality, it's Longfang and the Dai Li who control the city with an iron fist.
Yep. And he says here, like, Longfang says that it's strict policy that the war is not mentioned within the walls. Then he says, constant news of an escalating war will throw the citizens of Ba Sing Se into a panic. And at the same time, we see the Dai Li agents drag Jet into a room, making him sit on a stone chair and getting his hands cuffed. Pretty intimidating stuff. A little scary.
Yeah, and then the speech continues because he says, our economy would be ruined, our peaceful way of life, our traditions would disappear. And this is classic, like, totalitarian dialogue where it's like, oh, if you don't follow the law and you don't follow every single rule to a T, the world will collapse. When in reality, it's like, a little bit of anarchy didn't help anyone. You don't want to live in a purely totalitarian society.
That might be your hottest take ever. A little bit of anarchy didn't hurt anyone.
A tiny bit, a skosh of anarchy. Some protests here and there. A little anti-government. I don't know. I think a pinch of anarchy. A hint, if you will. A smidgen.
Just one little note of anarchy here in the government.
Exactly.
All the food metaphors coming together. But yeah, so then they're talking, like, we start cutting back between this, like, Jet getting this, this message drilled into him that there's no war within the walls. There's no war in Ba Sing Se. And we see, like, there's this light that goes between them. And they do a cool thing where as the light goes through and, like, swings again, we cut back to Long Feng. And it's, like, constantly, like, showing this two things, and the two scenes are building and building together.
Yeah, I really like how the episode shows Jet being brainwashed, interspliced with Long Feng giving this speech. Mm-hmm. Really good storytelling mechanic.
For sure. And then one, like, I think probably one of the most evil things that Long Feng here says is, he's like, look, you've been our guest here, like, you're trying to, you know, fit in. And as long as you do that, like, that's fine. But now you're going to be watched by the Dai Li agents. Like, you will be under surveillance. And we know you're looking for your bison. And hopefully you can find it. Hint, hint, wink, wink. That's just, little intimidation here from Long Feng.
Yeah, a little intimidation tactic. Hopefully it doesn't work on our gang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My guess is it doesn't. But then we see, last thing we see is Ju Di walk in. This is not the Judy that we know. This is a slight replacement. And Katara immediately spots it and is like, what happened to Judy? And we hear, I am Judy. I'll be your host as long as you're in our wonderful city. Back to a cheerful one. And then we fade to credits in one of the most creepy exits of this episode.
Yeah. This was a very creepo depo end to the episode, to use your term from earlier.
Exactly. But there you go. That is the episode. That is the City of Walls and Secrets. Lots of walls, lots of secrets.
Yeah, I like this episode a lot. What are your thoughts on this episode?
I agree. I like this episode. I think that it's really fun. I feel like this sort of, like, politics and, like, inner turmoil, and it's like, how will this work out, is so interesting. Like, I feel like we could get a whole serial season on this, or like an entire season of Invisibilia or some other podcast to, like, dive into, like, what was the history of the city? Like, can we uncover anything interesting here? I thought this was super interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And just like I said earlier, just showing the dark underbelly of the Earth Kingdom was really cool. I like how the Earth Kingdom is not just all sunshine and rainbows. There is a dark undertone to it. And just the reveal at the end that Judy is like Nurse Joy from Pokemon, and there's just a million of her ready to be disposed in any circumstance, I thought it was really funny too, and a great storytelling mechanic.
Yeah, and for so long it's been like very black and white. It's like, okay, we fight the Fire Nation because we're the Avatar team. The Avatar team does not want the Fire Nation to win because they're evil. And now it's like kind of messing with that narrative a little bit. It's like, yes, Team Avatar wants to fight the Fire Nation. There's like a new type of adversary, and this type of adversary is not so black and white. It's like often 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent way to put it. I completely agree.
Yeah. So you want to jump into our episode ranking, Zach?
Let's do it up.
Sweet. So every week we rank the episodes of Avatar The Last Airbender. We take my ranking, Zach's ranking, and your ranking, the listeners, and we average them between 0 and 4 cabbages. As always, you can write in to avatar@poshorecaps.com with your ranking to be included in our ranking of the episode so we can get more feedback. Zach, you want to start us off this week?
Yeah, I'm going to give this episode a 3.5 out of 4.
You know what? We are in sync, Zach. We're crushing it today. That's also my score, but let's explain your score just a little bit more.
Yeah, I'll explain it. So basically, what knocks it down a little bit, I really like the A-side story. I think the B-side story, just the cutting back and forth with the fight, hurt it. And also, it's like Stalker Jet. I don't know. I just felt like depressed almost. I didn't feel amused watching the downfall of Jet. It's just like, I always thought Jet kind of got a raw deal, and I always feel sympathy for him. So yeah, that kind of knocks it down a little bit for me. But 3.5 out of 4, still solid score overall.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 3.5 out of 4 from me as well. I think we get most of the cabbages in this episode. I think we have some pretty interesting characters. Like, I think the Judy stuff is funny. I think we, like, when she's, like, making jokes behind their head, like, you know, saying, like, or she's, like, you know, making faces behind their head. I think those are lead to some funny jokes. We have, like, some Momo bits that I think are good. But, yeah, like, I don't know. I really do like this tea shop narrative. I think this tea shop narrative is really interesting, but I think that it starts off a little slow, and I think that the pacing and the cutting between it holds it back a little bit. The listeners of the, oh, so that's why I'm at 3.5. The listeners of this episode are pretty low, I would say, at a 3.18.
Whoa, the listeners, that's crazy to me. Y'all are hella low on this episode. That's yeah, insane.
I think maybe, like, I don't know, maybe I'm just thinking about it too, like, game theoretic or something, but, like, people know, like, the next episode is, like, Tales of Ba Sing Se. That's a great episode. Maybe people, like, if they were looking ahead, they're like, okay, I can't rate this one too high because I know the next week is just a banger. So maybe that's it.
I guess.
But that'll leave this episode at a 3.39.
All right. Now do we jump into our fight rankings, Battle of the Battles?
Yeah, let's get into our Battle of the Battles. Same thing as we do for the episode rankings, but here we are talking about the battles. The interesting battle of this week is the Jet versus Zuko. You want to start us off on this one again, Zach?
Yeah, I'll give this a round 3 out of 4. Honestly, I would be way higher on it if they didn't do the cutting back and forth. I thought it kind of sucked the momentum out of it, as you were saying. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 3 out of 4. That's my score.
Yeah, I think this is like so close to being what I want. So I'm going to give it a 3.15 just because it's so close to what I want it to be. Like, it has some really interesting moments, I feel. Like, when they're fighting back-to-back and they're going at it, that's, like, that's pretty cool to watch them fight. And I think, like, when Jet takes his two swords and, like, swings them back and forth towards each other, that's, like, also pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think it has, like, so much potential. Just, like, the pacing of it's just, like, like, it's stop and start. So, there you go. 3.08. for this fight. As always, you can write in avatar@postshowrecaps.com. Thank you so much for writing in. We have one listener question this week, Zach. It's from John. John was asking about the city, Ba Sing Se, and he's pretty down on the city. He was asking, would you rather live in Ba Sing Se in the Lower Ring or be captured by the Fire Nation?
I think I'd rather live in the Lower Ring because, like in any capitalist society, you just have to try to, like, rise, grind, and shine, kind of like Iroh does. So at least there's room for, like, maneuvering and getting a better job and going. Whereas if you're captured by the Fire Nation, we saw how they treat prisoners of war. We saw how they treated Tyro and Haru on that ship. So I do not think I would want to be captured by the Fire Nation. Rather, I would rather live in the Lower Ring.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that I would probably make it out of the Lower Ring if I was put there. You know, I don't have a master tea recipe. I'm probably
Me neither. Like, me neither. But it's just like the fact that there's like a 1% chance you could make it out of there. Whereas with the Fire Nation being captured by them, I think it's even less than that.
Yeah. Because if you look at like imprisoned, it's just so brutal. Like, it's bad, but like imprisoned was way worse. I mean, or even like the Boiling Rock prison that we'll get in season 3. Like,
oh man, that's so with May's dad. Yeah.
Yeah. So many things I would not want to do. So I would say like, you know, put me in Omashu any day, even put me in that like Misty Palms Oasis place. But yeah, don't put me in a Fire Nation prison.
Yeah. I'm not going to no Fire Nation prison either. I wouldn't last a day in there. I'm out.
I would not do very well there. But there you go. That is all we have for you this week. Next week, we have a really special episode. An episode that, like, really is just so great in so many ways. It's the Tales of Ba Sing Se. An amazing episode. And I would love to hear your thoughts on the episode. Please do write in. avatar@postshowrecaps.com or tweet at us @postshowrecaps, because there's so much interesting stuff to discuss, and I'd love to hear what you are interested in.
Yeah, and if you're writing in, try to write in before Friday or like Saturday. Usually, we usually record Saturday, Sunday, so always try to write in before then. So before the weekend, ideally. And we love all the feedback we get from you guys. You can also leave us a 5-star review. postshowrecaps.com/ATLA. Is that the correct link? Yep.
Yep. That's
okay. That is just make it sure.
No worries. Cool. Yeah. Zach, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at ZachMohammed32. And where can they find you, Jacob?
People can find me on Twitter at JK Redman, or you can listen to me and Felipe talk about Scooby-Doo movies over on the Brazilian Dragon podcast. And I know that Dai Li probably wouldn't be happy about me saying this, but happy Pride Month. You know, June is Pride Month, so yeah, go celebrate. Have some
fun. Yeah, happy Pride Month. Shout out to all the Pride people celebrating Pride out there. I almost said Pride people. My apologies.
Pride people. I mean, everyone's a Pride person, right?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, there we go.
Yep, that's all we have for you this week. Check back next week with the Tales of Ba Sing Se. You know, I'll already spoil it. A 4 out of 4 episode. So
yeah, 100% a 4 out of 4 episode. I agree completely. So awesome. There you go.
Until next time, see ya.
Peace out, everybody.